Good evening, Vancouver. Welcome back to Canucks After Dark. Monday, April 15th. We are just 5 days away from the playoffs, although maybe 8 days away from Canucks playoff hockey. But as always, joined by my co-host, Canuck Clay. How are you doing today, Clay?
I am doing great, Parker. I'm doing great because we are still scoreboard watching because we're not sure where the Canucks are going to end up. And that is way better than every other year when we are trying to figure out how every game affects our lottery odds. So this is brand new territory for me and you, and I think we both love it, if I can speak for both of us.
Yeah, usually by now we are well resigned to figuring out how we are going to kill 2.5 months before the draft and free agency.
Yes.
Now, hopefully the Canucks give us 2 months of that time to not do that. Very optimistic, of course, but look, the Canucks are down to 2 games left in their schedule, playing Tuesday against Calgary, Thursday against Winnipeg. And in a perfect world, that Thursday game might not even matter. So this could be, this team is just in gear up for the playoffs mode. It looks like they're going to get a long rest, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Playoff chases are going crazy around the league. We'll talk about the race on the East because that's the most intriguing generally. But of course, we'll talk about what everything means for the Canucks, right? The Vegas push, Nashville has locked in essentially wild card one. So if the Canucks finish first in the Pacific, which is second in the conference, they'll face Nashville, but they still could catch Dallas. There's still a bunch of things that could change. So we're going to run through all that here tonight.
Exactly. And yes, Canucks fans, everyone watching, thank you first and foremost. And yes, there's still a remote, but still a chance that we have to play Vegas in the first round, but we'll talk through all those scenarios. Parker, it's crazy because we did Wednesday for last week. We only have one game to talk about, a nice win for the Canucks, and then we can spend the majority of the show talking about the East, talking about the West, talking about the Pacific, talking about the conference, the West Conference. This is gonna be a fun show tonight because the playoffs are 1 week away, and as you kind of hinted, maybe even longer than a week away, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. And this is a tough one for me. There was one game and I didn't watch most of it, unfortunately.
I got you. Don't worry. I got you.
I think I had a game at 7:45 that night, which is of course the worst possible time because it ends maybe it was 8:45 and I watched the first period and that's all I could see. So, but a big win in a game that I didn't have much confidence that they would win, to be completely honest with you, but obviously Connor McDavid missing, but balanced out somewhat by Thatcher Demko missing, but an all-worlder from Casey to Smith. So that's our plan. People are piling in. Thank you all for joining us so far.
It's great. People are excited, Matt. Not maybe a little bit for you and me, more you than me, but more importantly for where the Canucks are right now and all of the uncertainty, as certain as we are that they're making the playoffs, but it's still, it's kind of cool. We're in a really neat space right now, I think.
Yeah, it was a nice title for me to be able to go with, saying the Canucks will win the Pacific Division. Look, technically, Hockey Images That Precede Unfortunate Events Twitter, please don't screenshot this. A lot would have to go wrong for the Canucks to not win the Pacific.
Correct.
That would mean getting no points in the last two games while Edmonton wins out, which is, frankly, really unlikely. As unlikely as the Canucks winning the Western Conference, which is technically still a possibility as well.
Yeah, basically everyone can change atop the conference and the divisions if certain teams win out, but Edmonton only had to win three and they did the first one tonight. So, but yeah, that means we got to muck up the next two games, not even get a single point, which I know we'll get into this properly so people can, get out their spreadsheet or their pad of paper, or their abacus, whatever they want to do and follow along.
Yeah. We know very likely what's going to happen, right? Just statistically, like, yes, there's the edge cases. So right now, and I'm going to pull up the old standings just to make sure I have everything right up to date.
Okay.
As it stands today. So the Vancouver Canucks sit first in the Pacific with 107 points. Let's start just from the Pacific. 80 games played. The only team that can catch them is Edmonton with 80 games played. Edmonton is 3 points behind. So it is that simple. The Canucks hold the tiebreaker. Edmonton would need to win both of their games, while the Canucks would have to get no points in the last two games. Now, the odds of that happening, pretty low, frankly, right?
Yeah.
Possible, but coming into today, The Athletic had the Canucks at a 96% chance of winning the Pacific. Of course, the Edmonton Oilers do get a win, pretty handily fought win 9-2 over San Jose tonight. So that helps their odds a little bit. But again, they do have to, you know, the Canucks win against the Oilers was huge for that.
Yes. Yep. No, you're right. And then we'll, I'll put this away because let's talk about the game first. But and then others making a point. Yeah, actually, technically, the one thing we do know is LA cannot beat Nashville. They cannot catch Nashville. So if LA wins their game, they get to 99. They have the same regulation wins, but then Nashville has the tiebreak on LA. But well, LA is only in sixth technically by virtue of being the Pacific team. But we'll get into all that in about 10 or 15 minutes after we break down the game first, as we usually should do. Yeah,
absolutely. So let's go back to Saturday night, Canucks traveling to Edmonton to take on the Oilers. Like I said, without Connor McDavid, Canucks obviously without Thatcher Demko, who will start tomorrow night, but we'll get to that. So they go back to Casey DeSmith. Shelov gets a few starts, does quite well. I mean, he gets some wins. Casey DeSmith gets a little bit of seemingly needed rest. You know, he's been good in the backup role all season. You know, you put him out in this, like, hey, you're playing every night, every other night, you know, the sort of grind. Didn't seem like he was really ready for it, but gets some rest, goes out. And I just want to start with that. I mean, we'll go, you know, obviously step by step, but 32 of 33, against a team with as much firepower as the Oilers. Like that's a great bounce back game for Casey DeSmith and should really shut up any rumors about, oh, should Shelov be the backup in the playoffs? No, he shouldn't be. It's a good story. He's been playing well, but Casey DeSmith is far and away the guy if anything were to happen to Demko.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. And the interesting thing, Parker, I was thinking about this and I made this point on my show. If they knew, and I know you and I were speculating about this last Wednesday, if they knew for sure that Demko was going to start the Calgary game and nothing sooner than that, then it actually makes sense that Shelov played on Wednesday against Arizona, a team he beat the week before, and that they saved DeSmith for Edmonton on Saturday. So it actually, when you step back now and look back at the past week, the way that they went Shelov DeSmith actually makes sense if they knew that Demko was only going to come back tomorrow.
And it sounds like that was the plan. That's what Demko was saying. The plan all along was for him to come back in the Calgary game, which, you know, a long timeline out to target a game like that. But that's what they did, seemingly. So let's break this game down. It's a depth game for the most part for the Canucks. And it starts off, scoring wise, late in the first period. Edmonton had the jump early in this game, I think is pretty fair to say. But the Canucks sort of battled back in the latter half of the second period. And it ends up being Sam Lafferty just coming in on a rush, gets a puck from Zadorov and just beats Stuart Skinner.
Yeah, it was a good play. I watched a couple of times. Zadorov made a nice pass to Lafferty. Lafferty came in with speed, which is one of his attributes. He came on for Brock Besser, so a good, well-timed line change. And yeah, you're a D-man, so I love your thought on this. Darnell Nurse didn't close the gap. I don't know if he was respecting Lafferty's speed, if he was respecting JT Miller driving the lane or Suter on the front, whatever it was a quasi 3-on-2. So I get that Nurse maybe couldn't commit right away, but he left enough time for Lafferty to rip that shot past the far side. Skinner's kind of cheating out too much too. So there's maybe both Skinner and Nurse didn't play that perfectly, but credit to Lafferty for a really good shot.
Yeah, for a guy who hasn't been scoring much, and it's not well played by Darnell Nurse. Gap control is so important, especially you got to know who's out there, right? Like you've got a guy like Sam Lafferty coming in on you, right? You should be playing that pretty aggressive because in theory you are a better defender than he is a scorer, right?
Yes.
So even if he gets a little half step on you, you should be able to still keep him to the outside, trying to break up a pass. But yeah, he just lets him walk in and get a quality scoring chance off. And you know, Stuart Skinner's not, you know, he's not a top goalie in the league. He's a fine goalie. You just gotta play that a little bit tighter, I think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Scott saying terrible angle. Yes, he was, Parker just said, didn't play it tight, cheated a little bit. And in a period where you say Edmonton probably had the advantage, it was nice for us to go into the break with the lead for sure.
Absolutely. So we go to the second period, and then about halfway through the second, I think this was a better period from the Canucks, much more even. It's Pugh Suter, again, sticking with that depth theme. And I don't know when the last time Sam Lafferty had scored. I know Pugh Suter has not been hitting the score sheet a lot lately. He gets his 14th. This is a really nice play by Tyler Myers. I remember watching this. I was watching this before my game. It was an 8:45 start. So I'm in the dressing room with the phone, and I immediately see the zone entry, and I'm thinking, this is offside. This doesn't count. But what happened is you have one guy getting off the ice onto the bench, and the virtual ad on the boards sort of clips out his legs. So it looks like he's still standing on the ice, but then his legs disappear and it's really confusing, but I guess he did get his feet into the boards. So it wasn't offside. Myers just goes in, throws it to the middle. Suter gets a really nice tip on it. And the Canucks have a 2-0 lead.
Oh, you know, I didn't even think about that. I was so marveling in awe of Tyler.
I didn't celebrate for a second when I saw that go in. I was like, this is not going to count.
Okay.
Because it really, like, I don't know if you have the replay in front of you, but on the zone entry, the SO ad, like, he's stepping into the bench and there's a gate there, but the gate doesn't exist because the virtual boards have overwrote the gate. So it looks like, to me, that he's trying to vault the boards, but he's obviously not doing that. So it's a weird visual trick from the fake ads that make it look like he's just standing on the ice when he's actually on the ledge going into the bench.
I think it's Garland. Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Oh, that is strange. I didn't even notice. Like I said, I was too busy marveling at the beautiful pass to the middle that, a really nice touch by Myers and even a better touch by Suter for sure. That's really funny, Parker. Great observation, man.
Yeah, that's just me being scared of goals coming back. That's the one thing that I don't like about the reviews is sometimes you can't celebrate too hard till the face off.
Right.
So Suter gets his 14th. Nice play from Tyler Myers. He's up to 23 assists on the season. Yep. Edmonton does get one back though. It is Evander Kane. This one I wasn't watching at this point. Look, this is just a point shot that he's standing in front and he redirects.
Yeah, it's actually so Hronek got beat off, outmuscled on the puck. People were saying he was a little bit too slow to get to the front. So as Nurse takes the shot, actually Nurse gets the secondary assist because Connor Brown and Kane were both crossing in front of DeSmith. So apparently Brown tipped it enough where it changes deflect very quickly. So they're both swiping down basically, and it goes off of Brown, off of Kane. They both celebrate exact same way. Like they both thought they scored and it was Kane's goal. And it looked close to high stick, but it wasn't. So no challenge, no nothing. So double deflection to get past to Smith.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, if that's the only way that he gets beat on the night, there's not much you can complain about. So we go to the third and the Canucks go into turtle mode. Yes. They're patented, you know, whatever it was, the first 30 times they led after two, they didn't lose. It's been a little shakier since then, right? It was more of a, I think they're like 45-5 or something closer to those numbers, where it's fallen apart a little bit. But this is something that this team is going to be doing in the playoffs, right? If the Canucks have a one goal lead going to the third in the playoffs, they are going to be shutting it down. And they're really good at it. They've proven it time and time again all season. They have just 5 shots. They allow just 8 in the third. And the Canucks just sort of suffocate the Oilers. And then a really untimely goalie pull from the Oilers right as they enter the Canucks zone. The puck gets turned over with the goalie sort of caught all the way to the bench with the guy already on the ice. Puck just goes over to Joshua. He's got a wide open empty net as he walks into the zone.
Yeah, it's nice to see that our newly minted third line being very unselfish. Garland could have shot it, but he passed it to Lindholm in the middle. Lindholm could have definitely shot it, but he passed it to Joshua, who had a better angle. And yes, Joshua, make no mistake, put it in. And I love what you said about protecting leads. And I'm not sure if you're going to get to this or we can just get to it now because he is tallied in the scoring. Lindholm had an awesome game. Like, he might not be ripping the puck in the net or might not be piling up the points. And it's not me, Parker, trying to justify the trade. We know how much we gave up to get him. We know what Kuzmenko's doing in garbage time in Calgary. So I don't discredit any of that. But Lindholm really shut down. I know there's no McDavid, but he shut down Draisaitl. And if this is the Lindholm we get for the playoffs, wins faceoffs, kills penalties, and breaks up plays and getting other guys frustrated, I'm all for it, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's a heck of a playoff player. Like, it's not the 40 goal scorer that we were kind of hoping, you know, I'll put him with skilled players and he's going to excel again. We haven't seen that. Obviously, there's been injury woes and, you know, he's been a little hit or miss. But to come out, you know, sort of as a bounce back and as the third line center, I mean, you look at this team down the middle right now, right? You go, you know, Miller, Patterson, and then you now have Lindholm between Joshua and Garland on that third line. That is a heck of a grinding third line that can, that has some scoring upside, but is suffocating to deal with. And I think that's going to be, look, they paid a lot for a 3C, essentially, is what they're getting, but they're getting a pretty elite third line center with that scoring upside. That, you know, that's one of those players that you put him in the playoffs, he could very well be a big difference maker.
Yeah. And isn't it funny, Parker, how we've talked many times about the duos, and it's usually a center and a winger, but we made the point last week that Joshua and Garland, the two wingers, are actually the duo. They've now played with three of the four centers. They started the season with Bluger, they had that stint with Miller, and now they're with Lindholm. So the only center they haven't played with is Petey, actually. It's kind of cool how much, as you said, that Rick Tocchet loves them as a pair.
Yeah, and they've been so good, right? Like, that's obviously the big key, is they're just defined by their success. So a pretty solid win. I mean, if you look at things like natural stat trick, you'll be like, oh, the Canucks, you know, got outplayed. And it was really just the first period, right? Yeah. In all situations in the first period, expected goals were about 2 to 0.6. But of course, we know that the Canucks scored the only goal in the first. Second period was basically 55-45 in favor of the Oilers. And the third period was 55-45 in favor of the Canucks. So essentially, and I think that empty netter might influence that a little bit, but either way, that's, you know, one period that the Canucks survived, thanks essentially to Casey DeSmith, and the Canucks put their foot on the gas, took the two goal lead, or I guess at one point, one goal lead into the third, and just closed the lanes.
Did you? I don't know about you, Parker. I think I've said before, I make a point of watching the post-game media availability from the opponent only when we win, because I don't like watching it when we lose. I don't do anything when we lose, basically. But the Oilers are, like, the coach is fine. Knobloch gave the Canucks credit. I mean, everyone says, that's a good team over there. They don't even reference our names. That's a good team over there. But the players, Parker, to a man, they downplayed the loss as if, not to say we're going to get them in the playoffs. They didn't mention Vancouver. They talked just in general about they're going to make the playoffs. They're fine. They're the best team in the league. Da, da, da. Desharnais said that, I think. So it's kind of funny how I think it'd be the opposite. If they had won, they would be talking about, oh, now we're 1 point behind for the Pacific Division lead. But because they lost, they were kind of resigned to the fact that it's going to still possible, but improbable.
Yeah. And look, the Oilers are still going to have home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs, whether that's against LA or that's against Vegas, that is yet to be seen. But what this game did for the Canucks is lock up home ice in the second round, essentially, which is big, right? That gives that, you know, I think the odds are something like 54 to 55% of the time the home team wins, just generally in the NHL. It's about a 5% swing. So that's, you know, it's a nice little edge to have, especially when you're going to be maybe against an Edmonton or an LA or a Vegas in that second round. It's going to be a really nice boon to have the extra game at home.
Yes. No, all those things for sure. That's why, I do think that winning the division is important for the Canucks for sure. Yeah, why not? You want every advantage you can get. That's why I don't worry about the President's Trophy curse, not like that the Rangers worry about that, but the practical part of winning the President's Trophy is every round that you're in, you're guaranteed a home ice advantage. And why not? Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely helps.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's two games to go.
Yeah.
Which we can, I mean, we touched on those really quick because they really don't carry a ton of weight looking at the standings. Right. The Canucks, it's either they get no points and they hope Edmonton loses at some point, or they get a single point across the two games and then they're fine. It doesn't matter.
Right.
So,
right.
Perfect world. Canucks go in, take down the Flames tomorrow, and then they can really just rest some guys. They'll have a week. They would have a full week then until the rumor is Tuesday that the Canucks would start their playoffs. That would be a full week of rest. There's a bunch of things that we can talk about there. Of course, Demko and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, awesome. So a perfect way to transition. Want to thank Coach Rob for gifting 5 memberships. Carol for gifting 10 memberships. So that's awesome. Peter acknowledging that he's been around here for 9 months as a member, which is great. And Fangirl, 21 months, which is probably as long as we've had membership. So thanks to Coach Rob, to Carol, Peter, and Fangirl. Thank you for your generosity. By the way, this is the first time that Parker and I are streaming on X as well, former Twitter. That's helped the numbers a little bit, but still, it's awesome. There's over 100 people on the YouTube side, over 200 people on the X side, which makes us beg the question, why haven't we been doing this earlier?
Yeah, silly mistake on our end, to be completely honest with you. That's error on our part, unforced error. So for those of you on the X side, and I know the majority, or Twitter, I'm calling it Twitter, I'm not calling it X.
You do whatever you want, man.
The majority on the Twitter side, I know you're on Clay's, but you feel free to come by the YouTube as well. So hit the subscribe button, hit like. If you are here on Twitter, make sure you're following us there as well. This is good for the playoffs. And yeah, I really don't know where to go next, because we have standings to talk about. We have what do you do with that Demko to talk about. We have obviously the scheduling to talk about for game one. There's so many different ways for us to go that I'm just going to lean back and let you pick one.
Okay. How about this? Let's say Canuck-centric. Let's talk about the next two games. And I have a question for you about Demko, which will lead us into Canuck scenarios, Canucks opponents, and then we'll bounce to the East end off. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Awesome. If the Canucks win tomorrow night, Parker, and they sew up first place in the Pacific, do you play Demko on Thursday, send him out to Winnipeg for the one game, even though he might not be backstopping a full team, even though Winnipeg might not have a full team, but you get him the reps? Or can you mimic that in practice, which you said might be all the way until Tuesday the 23rd? What says you?
There's a lot of factors at play. If the Canucks go out, Thatcher Demko stops, 27 of 28, has a fantastic performance, just looks ready to go. I'm thinking, don't even send him to Winnipeg, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
If the Canucks lose, or maybe it's like a 4-3 win where he lets in 24 or 27, maybe it's not a great performance and he's, is still getting back into it, then I think you play him. I think you give him two chances essentially to gather momentum going into the playoffs.
Okay.
It was interesting. So I was listening to Kevin Woodley this morning on Halford and Brough, and he was mentioning essentially there's, practice reps just can't replicate game speed, which is one thing to focus on. And that's why he was saying, I think they'll just play him in both games, especially with 5 days of rest after that Thursday game. The other side of that, he said, though, is that if you do, let's say, win against Calgary tomorrow, let's say they rest five guys for that Thursday game. Let's say Besser doesn't play, which I think would be a given that he's had, a couple of maintenance days lately. Maybe good they point. Sit Pettersson and Lindholm and Miller, like some of the big guns. He was then saying, if you have guys in front of you who aren't doing what you're expecting them to do because it's, lower caliber, that might also throw off your rhythm a little bit. So there's a lot of things at play, and it's a way tougher decision. For me, I don't know if I love him only playing one game going into the playoffs after not playing for over a month. But I also don't want to risk him getting hurt when he could have a whole extra week of rest, essentially.
Yeah. So fascinating. And you're right. If somehow they lose against Calgary tomorrow, which I hope not, it's their home finale, but then it's a moot point. You play them, you still try and win the division, right? And then the bonus is, well, not even a bonus. Intuitively, he gets more reps. But yeah, so maybe they worry about this after they see what happens tomorrow night. But that's going to be fascinating to watch. But more importantly, the bigger story here is Demko's coming back. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a huge boon for the team. You really, that injury could not have cut it closer, frankly. it's just good for the league, right? You don't want Casey DeSmith in game one. Nothing, based on last night, not necessarily a terrible thing, but Demko's the guy. He needs to be there. It'll be great to have him back.
All right, second Canucks question for you, Mr. Parker. When you heard Tuesday, what did you think? So I'll start this one off. Selfishly, I loved it because I think you and I were talking about we didn't want to show on Monday. We didn't want to – actually, maybe did want a game on Monday. No, we didn't. As much as we want to talk Canucks, we weren't sure if we were going to go to the game, if we're going to have people over or whatever. So whatever happens. I know for me personally, Saturday, Monday, Wednesday were my worst options because I couldn't go Saturday, I couldn't go Wednesday. But Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday are my best options because I can make all three of those dates. Did you – smile when you saw Tuesday, or did you not care?
No, that's big for me. There's a couple reasons. Obviously, if we focus on this show, normally we do this Monday at 10 p.m., like where you are right now.
Yeah.
If the Canucks played on Monday at 7 p.m., let's say, I'm going to have a bunch of people over, and then we'd have to move the show like to Sunday so we can preview the series. What this allows us to do from the show perspective, the game's on the Tuesday, the 23rd. Yeah. Monday, the 22nd show is just all talk about this series, and we'll know who the opponent is. We'll know,
we can break down every single line,
every single matchup, which is going to be a ton of fun. The other part of it for me is that I have a work trip the following week. I'm gone from Monday to Thursday.
Okay.
Now, Game 5 is the game I have tickets for, which I was doing the math on and was going to either fall on the Wednesday, which I had no chance of going to, or the Thursday, in which case I would need to move my flight to an earlier flight and give Air Canada more of my money. However, if they play Tuesday, or they start Tuesday, and they do two-day gaps for travel, which I don't know if that'll happen with the series starting so late. That's an iffy one. It looks like the Canucks won't play Game 5 till Friday, the 3rd, which means I'm laughing. So there's a lot of things at play. Tuesday is best case scenario for me, though.
Actually, you know, it's so funny. When I asked that, I actually forgot. You did tell me about that last week about when we went off air. So what happened? So Parker, let's say they say, don't worry about the travel. You guys got to make up the time. It's the same for both teams. If they go every second night, then that puts Game 5 on the Wednesday, right?
Wednesday, and then
that's bad for you. That's bad.
Then I can't make it. Okay. If it's the Thursday, I can make it. It's just expensive because I have to change my flight from the 5 p.m. flight to the 7 a.m. flight, which I will do if I have to, but it's not the ideal option.
And so even if it's not even two-day gaps, even if it's just one, either going there or coming back, then that gets you at least to the Thursday the 2nd. So that's what we're hoping for. Friday the 3rd is ideal. I hear, and it's, you know what's crazy is I thought, well, I know, I'm going to be in Denver for my graduation, for my master's, from Thursday the 2nd to Sunday the 5th. So imagine if the Colorado Avalanche are hosting the Winnipeg Jets. I'm going to be so tempted to go.
That'll be a hot ticket. I know. But it would be a heck of a game.
Okay, well, we'll worry about that. But I agree with you. If the series does start on the 23rd, then you think tonight's show is big. The next Monday show is going to be massive because you're right. We're breaking down every single thing about the playoff series, every combo, D pairing, every goaltender, every stat, head-to-head. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's something that we have not done, as we've lamented about in our 3 years of existence together.
Yeah, it's really exciting that this could have been, this show could have been, well, the Canucks have two games left. It's nice that Demko's back. Hopefully he'll be, you know, fully healthy for the preseason. Man, we got all these expiring contracts. What are they going to do with Ian Cole? What are they going to, you know, what are they going to do with Philip Hronek? Oh, thank goodness Petey resigned. The fact that we could have been having this conversation today, but now we're talking about, hey, 90% chance after the Oilers won today, 90% chance the Canucks win the Pacific Division, have home ice in the first two rounds, most likely play, honestly, the best case scenario in the Nashville Predators, not underestimating them, but I'd rather play Nashville and then Edmonton instead of Vegas than Edmonton, just because I think your odds are better and every percentage point counts. So, with, you know, the next couple weeks are going to be intense. I'm excited. I'm just going to be living, breathing, sleeping Canucks hockey, and sweating out every moment of every game. And it's not, I've done since 2020. Right. And even that felt, it didn't have that same feeling, but I think back to, you know, the Tanev overtime goal against Minnesota, and where I was for that. And like, that was like, I had a hockey game that night and my buddy recorded it at his house. So we get off the ice, we get unchanged so fast so no one can spoil it. We race to his place and watch the entire game until like 1 a.m. probably. And it was, like moments like that are the things you remember. And that's going to be really cool. I'm happy we're back there.
Me too. And I know in 3 weeks you will never hear me use the word master again, but obviously it's a big milestone in my life. And what's crazy, Parker, is... I'll just get your pity for 10 seconds here. I have my my paper, my capstone presentation, my paper, my capstone assignment, my capstone presentation, and my final all to be done before I get on my plane on Thursday, May the 2nd. So I'm going to try and do as much as I can before Tuesday night, the 23rd, right? For all intents and purposes, these two games aren't as important, obviously, as game one. So I'm going to try hard to work my butt off this weekend. So yeah, exactly. I want to live, breathe, and die Canucks over the, you know, over the first round. But I think I might have to do some studying in there too, which is kind of sucks. But not looking for pity, just stating where I'm at too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be great. So let's go to the standings and talk about where the Canucks currently sit.
Cool if I pull it up again? Is that good?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's do that.
So let's start. We'll start Pacific focused, like I sort of mentioned here. And I'm gonna see if I can make this bigger on my end too, so I can see it. Sure. So on your screen, you can see the standings. So let's look at the Pacific. Canucks, obviously 107 points, two games to play. The Oilers are 3 points back. Like we said earlier, the Oilers would need to win both of their games to then have one more point than the Canucks, and the Canucks would need to get no points because they hold the tiebreaker over the Oilers, which is that regulation wins column. Yep. So if that's the case, if the Canucks get a single point tomorrow or in the following game, it's over. The Canucks win the Pacific Division. That's really it. That's the only thing that can happen on this side. There is still the question of who gets third in the Pacific, which could be Vegas, could be LA. For the Canucks, that doesn't matter right now. That is an Edmonton problem.
Right, right.
The only case in which that does matter is if the Canucks win their final two games and the Dallas Stars lose their final game in regulation, because the Canucks would then tie them with 111 points and have the tiebreaker. So technically, the Canucks could still win the Western Conference.
Yes.
If that were to happen, then instead of playing Wild Card 1, which the Canucks currently would as the number 2 seed in the conference, they would play Wild Card 2, which would be either Vegas or LA, which is a little scarier to me. But being the 1 seed also has its perks as well. That's home ice through the first 3 rounds. And really potentially into the cup final, depending on who they're playing, right? Who makes it from the East. So, there's something to play for there, but it's not as likely as them just finishing first in the division.
So everyone in the chat, just process what Parker just said for a second. We understand the Vancouver versus Edmonton. All we need is a point, or then we lose a point and we get first in Pacific. But if we win both our games and Dallas does not get a single point, we have the tiebreaker. So picture this, as Parker said, Nashville is locked in to Wild Card 1 because they're just waiting to see what the two Pacific Division teams do, but they're locked in. So yes, for those of you who are fearing Vegas, and I don't believe in jinxes, I'll just say it. For those of you who are fearing Vegas, all Vegas has to do is finish behind LA. And if we get number one in the entire conference, we get Vegas. But I know we're going to go through Vegas, LA, Nashville, all the scenarios, how we can face them. But yeah, there is a chance. It's a very slim chance, because like I said, that would mean Vegas not getting any more points. That would mean Dallas not getting any more points and us running the table. But it's still there as a possibility.
Do we know who Dallas plays in their last game?
I can look that up.
You can probably just click on their name right there. Just while you know that you're sharing your screen, just to be on the safe side.
Whoops. I should have gone schedule.
It's at the top of the screen there. They play St. Louis. So it's a winnable game for Dallas for sure.
It is.
They were to lose that game on Wednesday, the Canucks do have a pretty good chance, I think, here of going 2-0 in the last two games, just because very real possibility if Winnipeg wins their next game, which is tomorrow, that game doesn't matter for Winnipeg.
Right.
Right. Because they would have a 3-point lead on Colorado, who has just one game left. So, they could be resting guys. The Canucks could be resting guys. Very possible that happens. But I would say we're in the 85 to 90% range that the Canucks will finish first in the Pacific, second in the conference, and which would result, now guaranteed, the Nashville Predators will be Wild Card 1. Because if Vegas were to catch Nashville, they would also catch LA, and LA would drop below Nashville in the Wild Card side, because I think Vegas and LA play each other at some point here for that last game for LA. So that's the only possibilities for the Canucks.
Yeah. Two things that you said that I think are very important to point out and to reiterate. Actually, technically, because Winnipeg holds, tiebreaker over Colorado, they only need 1 point in their next,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They only need 1 point in the next two games, and but you're right. If they get that point in their next game before we play them on the 18th, they could very well rest guys. Excellent point. And yeah, and Parker said this a few times, you guys, but it's so important to recognize why Nashville is indeed locked in. Well, you say, well, Clay, they can't, because LA can't beat them because of the virtue of the tiebreaker. So yeah, but they can't finish sixth because a Pacific team has to finish ahead of them by virtue of the way that the standings are set up. That's why Nashville is locked into seven.
Yeah. So very, yep. Very, very high chance that's who we're playing, which I think is, you know, the famous last words, but I think that is just best case scenario. It's nitpicky, right? But, you know, I think if I'm in a spot right now, I would love, like, hey, we'll take Nashville, which I think is, frankly, out of the eight teams available. I mean, think about, let's say you're a Winnipeg Jets fan. And yep. You say, all right, who would you want to play out of all these teams? Who would you be most willing to go up against? Their answers are probably Nashville, probably LA, and probably Vancouver would be my guesses, right? Because Dallas is scary, Winnipeg's scary, Colorado's scary, obviously. Those are true contenders. Edmonton's scary. And then Vegas has that cup pedigree. They have Mark Stone coming back. They're going to be, $30 million over the cap by game one. that's tough to go against. So I think it's not like, we want Nashville. It's just like, that's the team that the Canucks are the most likely to beat. And that's what we should want. And then, Vegas, four of these other teams, I guess three of the other teams, if you take Nashville out of that, they're now no longer in the way, right?
Yeah.
Winnipeg or Colorado is gone. Not in your path anymore. Dallas or Vegas, not in your path anymore. Edmonton or LA, one of them's not in your path anymore. So it gets, you want the easiest path possible. It's a long grind. So I think that's best case.
Great point. The first round is the most exciting round because everyone's healthy, relatively speaking, right? Obviously, you get injured and more banged up as you go. So there's upsets. There are 16 teams involved, but you're right. As soon as you get past the first round, your field and your side shrinks, intuitively, from 8 to 4. And I love what you said. There's going to be four good teams going home after 2 weeks, which is pretty crazy. And the other thing, Parker, I'd love for you to look in your crystal ball. So I looked it up for us. Vegas has Chicago and then Anaheim. LA's last game.
Is two easy wins as you could get.
And LA's last game is against Chicago. So they both have Chicago.
As easy of a win as you can get.
So I see Vegas, like if I had to guess, I'd say if Vegas wins their two and LA wins their one, Vegas jumps to six and LA drops. So then you have Edmonton Vegas as your first round.
Which I think that's my preference because that's going to be good hockey.
Yeah.
I think Dallas walks the Kings. Frankly, like that's a no contest. And I'm sure that's what Dallas wants too. If I'm Dallas, I'd much rather play LA than Vegas. I think Dallas is built so, so well, that I don't see them losing either of those teams, frankly, but, I think that's what you'd want as a Canucks fan too, right? Have Edmonton take out LA, most likely have Dallas take out Vegas, or vice versa. And again, that path gets a little bit more clear.
So then if that was the case, then our second round, we would be Vancouver versus, for instance, Edmonton, if Edmonton beats Vegas. And then the other division would be Dallas versus one of Winnipeg or Colorado. And then it looks even, wow, this is exciting, man. This is exciting.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I'm just looking at this field, right? These are the eight teams that are going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
This is a heck of an eight-team lineup. Like,
yes,
there's going to be four very competitive, very compelling series. And we get to watch three or four games a day, from this side and from the East. It's going to be fantastic.
Okay, friends, you guys think that was a mess? Check this out. Okay. I'll try to do this. I will shrink this a little bit because we have to see all the teams.
Yeah, too many to count.
Yeah, there. All right.
I don't know all the situations here.
No,
we
would take forever.
Yeah. I have them bookmarked, actually. I had a tweet that I grabbed. So, I mean, you look at this, right? You have the Islanders who have locked and Tampa Bay is locked. Everyone's locked except Wild Card 2.
Right here.
So there are four teams. Is Philadelphia still have a chance? I guess they do. Yeah. So all these teams have one game left and they are all within 2 points of each other. There's four teams here that could get through. Washington and Philadelphia play each other. If Washington wins that game, they're locked because obviously they're in the wild card two. If they get a win, they'll stay in wild card two.
They're the tiebreak. You got it.
If Detroit is playing Montreal, which they should win, they would need to win and obviously need Washington to lose in any fashion because they would get 2 points to 91. Washington would be less than that.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh plays against the Islanders. They need to win and they need both teams in front of them to each lose, Washington and Detroit. For Philadelphia, they obviously play Washington, so they would need to win to beat Washington, and that would put them ahead of Washington. Uh-oh, my camera died.
It's okay.
They would need to beat Washington and then obviously need Detroit and Pittsburgh to each lose to their respective opponents. Yeah. So it's a mess over there. Frankly, wow, this is going to be way lower quality. It's a mess, but it's entertaining, right? It comes down to the last game of the season, which is what you want.
And I think a lot of people are wondering, well, what the heck are the tiebreakers? So the tiebreaker number one is obviously point. That's not right. That's because you're tied. The tiebreaker number one really is regulation wins. So this takes out anything that's done in extra time. Then the second tiebreaker is all wins, including shootout and overtime. No,
it does not include shootout.
Oh, thank you. Just
regulation overtime.
That's why it says ROW. Gotcha. And then after that, it goes into like all these weird ones. Oh, yeah. One, no shootout, then include shootout. Gotcha. So it's three tiebreakers of wins. Then it goes to head-to-head. So technically, with Philly here, if Philly wins, they get to 89. They'll be tied with Washington in regulation wins. They'll be tied with Washington in ROWs. Then it'll be, as long as it's in a overtime and not a shootout. Wow, this is crazy. Basically, Washington controls their destiny because they have the tiebreaker over Detroit. That's, I think, the key thing to recognize here.
Yeah.
Wow, do you want to quickly go over, very quickly, and then we can get to the people, what the Eastern Conference matchups might look like then?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have Florida-Toronto,
yep.
Which will be fun. I guess Florida could still pass Boston, and that would be Boston-Toronto, which would also be fun. So right now, as it sits, it's the Rangers against whichever of those wildcard teams gets through. Then would have New York against Tampa, or sorry, Boston against Tampa. And then you have Florida, Toronto, Carolina, Islanders. Again, all those would be pretty good series, I think, except whichever wildcard two team gets in. They're probably going to get thrashed by the Rangers, but.
So it's crazy. Carolina Islanders is the battle of the Sebastian Ajos is the only series that's set because, as you pointed out, Florida can leapfrog Boston. So whoever comes in second of those two that's who Toronto gets to play. And then, and then it looks like then the other team who wins the division gets Tampa. So still a lot of uncertainty, even more uncertainty in the East than there is in the West.
Yeah, but it is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got 50 minutes to go. I think we covered everything. Did we pull this off?
Yeah, we did game review, which is only one, which helped. We did quick preview of the two and who, if Demko is going to play. And then, then we did all Canucks possibilities for playoff position, all Canucks possible opponents. And then we went through the East. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Pretty good on our part. So now is the time to go to the people. There are 170 of you here on the YouTube side, but there's over 550 of you in total across all three platforms. So get your questions in right now. I think do the Twitter ones come through?
They do. As long as they're not replying to one of our tweets. So Parker and I are both streaming this also on our individual Twitter accounts. So if you reply in the stream, as in, comment on the stream, we will see it here in our back end, which is great, in our app. But if you reply to the tweet, but no one does that anyway, so.
Yeah, that would be weird. Unless you did that, then you're not weird, you're normal. Let's go to the people. Jack asks what happens to my tickets if the Canucks sweep. Yes, I would get a refund in that case, but I would much rather the Canucks be up 3-1 in the series going into game five and then hopefully get to go see them get the win.
Yeah, actually, go ahead. Yeah,
that's yeah. So Arjen asks, does the long travel between Vancouver and Nashville hurt the Canucks if it's a long series? I mean, obviously it hurts both teams equally, but I guess you're saying for the future rounds as well. How long is that flight? Like 3 hour, 3.5 hour flight?
I think it's a bit more than that. I think it's four. I hear between 4 and 5. Yeah. Yeah.
Vancouver to Nashville flight time. 6 hours connecting. They will not be connecting. 4.5-ish. So yeah, that is that's a long flight. It's a lot of travel. I think it does. And I know this is getting a bit more play because of, you know, what Bieksa said about the travel from when they played Nashville and how it does have an impact. So it probably does. It doesn't help. In a perfect world, and again, I'm not saying this happens, the Canucks win the series in 4 or 5 games. You'd only have to travel. You'd stay at home for your first 2 games. You travel to Nashville for 2 games. You travel back home for the 1 game. So only one flight each way if you win it in 5. Which is best case scenario, right? And at that point you have a few days of rest and it's a non-factor. But if it goes to 6, you know, 6 and 7 is the same amount of flights. Then you're starting to, you know, then it might, those miles might have an impact.
Yes. Great point. So yeah, for this actual series. Yeah. Obviously both teams are traveling the same amount because they're playing each other. Philly asked a great question. I don't get how Flyers would pass Capitals if they won. Don't they have the tiebreaker? No. So what happens, Philly, is if, remember, Detroit's got to lose, Washington's got to lose, Pittsburgh got to lose. If Philly wins and they tie Washington, it gets to the 6th tiebreaker, which is goal differential. And the only team that has a worse goal differential of playoff teams than Philly is Washington. So they tie in wins, regulation wins, regulation and overtime wins, regulation, overtime shootout wins. They split the season series and then they get to the 6th tiebreaker, which is goal differential.
Yeah. The Capitals technically have that tiebreaker 31-30, as you said right now, but if Philadelphia wins in regulation, then they are tied. And like you said, it goes all the way down the line.
Yeah. Great point. Score prediction for tomorrow's game. I'm going to Old Faithful 4-2 Canucks. That's what I'm doing. I know it's a little bit lazy, but I feel like it's going to happen on the final home game of the season.
Yeah, I'll take a 3-1. I think the Canucks are going to play a pretty good shutdown game tomorrow, would be my guess.
Fair enough.
You know, score one early and just keep it tight.
Yeah, very good. Very good. I see people saying hi to Trev. Hey, Trev, I guess Kempner Canucks is in here. Nice to see you. What else we got here?
They are, the chats are flying in. I got to catch up here.
Japan says the NHL needs to go back to the 1-8 playoff system. Did you like that? The conference format?
I think it's more fair.
Yeah.
The conference format, but I really get where the NHL is going with the divisional rivalries, right? The idea is you're going to get the same teams playing against each other year after year. You're going to get those, you know, the rivalries like the Canucks and Chicago, you know, back in 2009 through 2011, because, if you keep getting, you know, just get Winnipeg and Colorado to play each other every year, right? Things will start to get a bit spicy. And these are also divisional teams. They're teams you see 4 or 5 times a year, right? So there might be some animosity already. And it just makes the games a bit more exciting. However, 1-8 is the most fair of all options.
Very good.
I was going to say, you could get crazy and get the play-in going. And then 6-10 is really important, but
exactly 20 teams instead of 16. I'll take this one. Stan says if the Canucks win against Nashville, who would they be facing in the second round? Would the Canucks have a chance? Well, of course they'd have a chance. They would play the winner, presuming, of Edmonton versus Vegas or Edmonton versus LA. And just a reminder to everyone, Nashville, by being the first wild card, but by likely playing the Pacific Division team, they technically play in the Pacific Division for the rest of the playoffs. And Vegas or LA, whoever's wild card two, technically plays in Dallas's division for the rest of the playoffs. So technically each of the divisions will have 3 of their native teams and then 1 crossover team. So that's why you could see 2 Pacific Division teams or 2 Central Division teams in the conference final, but it's very unlikely because that means the wild card team has run the table.
It's just like the CFL, the old crossover.
CFL, where you only have to be not one of the two worst teams and you make the playoffs.
That's the way it should be. Let's expand the NHL playoffs to 28 teams. It is funny too, because I honestly forgot how second round is seeded.
Yeah.
Because I haven't had to think about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the Canucks haven't been in the playoffs since that was even a thing. Except, was that a thing in 2015?
I can't remember. There was
it wasn't. 2020 was weird because the divisions were all wrong.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so I think at one point it was 1-8, but it reseeded every round, which is the most fair. And then it was like 1-8, but it's a bracket. So you're, you know, the 1-8 winners playing the 4-5 winner, no matter what.
Correct.
They, like you said, they try to keep it in division. So the winner of the, whoever led the division, right? In that series against the wildcard team, they play the winner of the other divisional matchup. So the Canucks will, no matter what, play a Pacific Division team in round two.
Correct. The reseeding was tricky for any bracket challenge because you couldn't actually set a bracket.
Yeah. And I think it might have made like arrangements a little bit harder too, right? If you know, like scheduling, like if you know, okay, hey, they're going to play one of these two teams, we can start to figure out arena stuff ahead of time. Whereas if it needs to get reseeded, you have to wait for all the series to be done to even think about scheduling. And then it's more complicated, I imagine.
I don't call it competition. I call it more brethren in the circle. Have you seen Brendan Morrison started a channel?
I did. I haven't watched any of it, but I did see that he did.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's cool. What else we got here?
It's one question about, like, is Hughes winning the Norris with Makar only 2 points back? He is. I don't have much of a concern about that. He'll win the Norris, Tocchet'll win the Jack Adams, and that'll be the two awards.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's fair. I think it's fair. What else we got?
G. Ellis, pretty negative on Patterson's side, saying PE has the most to prove come playoff time. He does nothing most games. Lately, he hasn't, you know, obviously been his best for the last couple months, really, which is shocking that he has 90 points still and like 34 goals. This is going to be a really interesting storyline because if you go through the Canucks lines, right, if you put Miller with Besser and Suter, right, like Miller in the playoffs, I think is going to be a monster, right? Like he's just has the exact build and play style for playoffs. And then I look at the third line of Lindholm. If he ends up with Garland and Joshua again, you know, that's a monster of a playoff line, especially if we're talking about Nashville. You look at Nashville's center depth, like it's not that good.
Yeah, frankly, I agree. Right? I agree.
So, you know, that's going to be where the Canucks have a clear edge is going to be that forward depth. What's going to be the really interesting part is going to be what is Elias Pettersson's line do, right? Does Pettersson elevate his game to that playoff level, which he strikes me as a guy who would, but it's starting to get a little bit concerning, you know, as we go through the season. And then if he's with Hoglander and Mikheyev, again, no worries about Nils Hoglander in the playoffs. I think he's going to be just a buzzsaw out there. But Mikheyev has been shaky. I mean, he had a prime scoring chance against Edmonton and of course couldn't find a way to execute.
Right in the glove. Yeah.
I think that line is going to have a big impact on how the Canucks play. Cause lines one and three and honestly line four, if we're talking, you know, Bluger, Lafferty and Podkolzin potentially, that also seems like a really good fourth line, frankly, or if it's not Podkolzin, if it's PDG or Amon or whoever you throw in there, you know, they might cycle that game to game, but I think that's going to be a really strong line for the Canucks. It's really that Pettersson line that's going to be a big question mark.
Yeah. I really like this question from Ricky because you can make arguments for a PD, or you can make even arguments. You know, I went to Miller and Hughes here, not because they're bad and they need to wake up. No, it's just, assert yourself as a true superstar, a true elite player. That's kind of the way I'm thinking, more than like a role player, actually.
Yeah, I look at a player like Victor Hedman and how, like, he obviously fantastic defenseman for his whole career, but in the playoffs he was, you know, just a monster, right? And Quinn Hughes, you know, he doesn't have the size, but he has the agility more than anybody else in the league. And we haven't seen him really in the playoffs, right? We haven't, you know, he was obviously really young back in their last foray. So it's going to be really interesting to see if he is still taking over games, if he changes his play style at all, or if he's still just freewheeling and has that confidence. I think that also really depends on the opponent, right? I think against a Nashville, Hughes is going to be, you know, playing his normal game, but does that change against a Winnipeg or a Dallas or in the second round against an Edmonton? Who has the most to prove? I think it's Elias Pettersson. But I also like the thought of Miller or Hughes or Lindholm, frankly. I think those are going to be very key pieces. And I hope Demko comes out proving things as well, right? Obviously, he had the bubble and he was fantastic, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah. Great point about Hughes, the wheeling and dealing, the freewheeling. And we know, Parker, that teams are going to take runs at him for sure. The playoffs is all about finishing your checks and rubbing guys out on the boards. But guys have tried to do that to Hughes all season, and he's been able to evade it, right? So we'll see. That's gonna be fascinating to watch for sure.
I saw some questions. I don't think I saw this exact question. Maybe I did, but I lost it. So sorry if you're the one that asked this. Just asking about, like, every time you have some sort of playoff push, you have an unlikely hero that sort of emerges as a fan favorite and someone who's just electric during the playoffs. Who do you think that ends up being for the Canucks?
Well, I'm not sure if this is the one that sparked it. Which one player do you think will be the major spark? Maybe.
Sure. That might be.
Yeah. Because actually he's been trending up. Garland has been trending up. I think Joshua has ability to, I think Joshua's going to win Unsung Hero tomorrow, quite frankly, but he's the ability to take a big hit, make a big hit, but also score. So I think it could be one of these secondary players. Like, we expect Besser, Miller, Hughes, Demko, and Petey to do well. So it's that next tier. So I would go Garland or Joshua. Actually, you know, I just said it's not about justifying the trade. I would love it to be Lindholm.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to the 2011 run, like, the big goals Rafi Torres scored.
Yeah.
Right. Like, like, that wouldn't have been my guess. Right. And so I think, you know, Garland and Joshua seem like the far and away favorites to be that guy. But like, what if Nikita Zadorov does something cool, right? Like, it has hit and then go, like, he has these weird rushes where he looks slow, but he just walks people. Like, maybe he pulls something like that. Like, I think that would be a bit of a potential hero. I think that would be really cool.
Love it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Parker. I think the NHL is constantly updating schedules based on arena availability. Of course, they don't know who's playing who yet. So they're basically have one ready, but they don't release it, I don't think, until the teams are set, right?
Yeah, the matchups will have to be set. I saw someone on the Canucks subreddit earlier today who, like, mapped out all the concerts at both arenas, at Bridgestone and at Rogers Arena. And it sort of worked out to have, like, it was like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So only a 1 day gap, but then it would be like then Tuesday, like a 2 day gap, 'cause there was a concert on the Monday or something along those lines. So there's a lot at play, right? It's not just going to be two games, 2 day break, two games, 2 day break. There's some things to contend with. You know,
given what we just talked about in your work trip,
they would be in the playoffs.
Yeah. I was going to say, given what we talked about earlier in your work trip, I'm sure you'd be thrilled if it was Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday.
Oh, because
then you're back.
I'd miss one game, but I'd figure it out. Right. I'll find a hockey bar in San Diego if I have to.
Speaking of hockey bar, have you heard about any watch parties or anything yet?
No, it's a touchy subject, obviously, with 2011. I just don't, I think 2011, like, there was all the cell phone cameras that no one really thought about, I think, that had their ramifications. But I think if anything happened now, like, it would all be recorded in like 4K, 60 frames per second, like unbelievable quality from 38 different angles. Like, I think it's a lot harder to get away with stuff now that I think it's probably fine, especially if you know, police it well, right? Have it like be a free ticketed entry or something, and like, and, you know, shut a street down or even just do it on like Griffiths Way, or Expo Boulevard, whatever that street is that goes under, right. You can sort of just shut that down at the corner where the Taco Fino is and or whatever. I don't know what place that is, by the Costco, right? Shut that whole thing down, get that whole plaza going, put a big screen out there. I'm planning on doing my own unless there's something big that I can go to, but,
Right. You should stream your watch party. I'm just kidding.
No, I'm not going to do that. Too risky.
Okay,
too many people to police.
There you go. Watch what I'm going to do here. I'm going to combine the rare quadruple tweet into one or question.
Whoa.
Because they're all the same. Watch this. Podkolzin our dark horse. What about Podkolzin instead of Mikheyev? Mikheyev should be on the fourth line. We need our sheep veins. Following this train of thought, the thing about Podkolzin is he's not experienced. And I think sometimes you go with a more experienced player. So I think it's going to be DiGiuseppe and Podkolzin switching in and out for each other on that fourth line. That's what I say. And I don't think Baines, he has even less experience than Podkolzin. So he'll be a black ace, but I don't think he's going to get playoff
I don't think Baines sees a second of ice time unless there's a bunch of injuries. Yeah, it's going to be PDG and Podkolzin in and out of that fourth line. And look, the lines aren't going to be set in stone, right?
Yeah.
Miller and Besser will play together. You know, Joshua and Garland will play together. Those are the big ones. And the way it slots out with everyone healthy is the way we described it earlier. But I said, yeah, it does leave Pettersson in a bit of a weird spot, right? I like Hoglander there, but Mikheyev's a big question mark. Maybe Podkolzin moves up for a shift or two for a spark, but I don't see that being, you know, I'm thinking game one starting lineup. I don't think you're seeing Podkolzin in the top six.
I agree.
I don't think he's playing more than 8 minutes a night.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's fine. He's been okay in the bottom six. He gets a couple of hits a game. Hasn't really looked dangerous around the net yet, but he'll play a role. There's going to be a lot of role players. We've talked about that for the past few minutes, that there's going to be a role for all players. You need all types in the playoffs to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're at about our time.
Yep.
So, folks, if you enjoyed the show, and this is by far our most viewed because we used Twitter for once. wow. If only we could have thought of this earlier, because I think there's about 450 people watching on Twitter right now, which is more than on YouTube by a good margin. So let's convert. Those of you on Twitter, thank you for joining. Feel free to go to the Canucks After Dark YouTube channel, hit subscribe over there so you see every time we're live. We do this, and we will be doing this every Monday, ideally, throughout the playoffs. So make sure you're following myself or Clay or both in a perfect world. If you are on the YouTube side and you missed any part of the show, you are welcome to rewind back to the beginning. You can also find it on your favorite podcast platform. We'll have that updated in about 15 minutes or so. Clay, any parting words on our final show before the end of the regular season and before our big playoff series preview next Monday?
No, you said it well, and we've talked about how excited we both are for this community, this channel, a chance for us to collab actually into the postseason for once. So I think we did a pretty good job of setting the table, and then next Monday we'll likely start serving some food up as we get ready for game one. So I can't wait, man. It's going to be a fun ride for sure. Let's hope it's a long ride too.
It's going to get in depth next week. We'll be going through every single player basically on the Nashville roster, every single matchup, power plays, penalty kills, the whole nine. It's going to be very, very fun. Make sure you stick around. Other than that, have a good night, everybody.